5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity on SB Nation Radio.
And online at sbnationlive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Brian Barrett.
All right, welcome in. Happy Saturday morning to you. No Charlie today. He'll be back next week. A well-deserved day off for Charlie Epps. Hope he's on the golf course somewhere. I know his grandson, Charlie, big golfer as well, so hopefully he's having some fun today, but definitely a well-deserved day off for Charlie. Bill Harmon will join us at about 6 minutes from now. A lot to get into this morning as the season kind of wraps up. Nowadays, there really is no off-season in golf because we get the CIMB Classic going on, we get the British Masters going on, so it just continues nowadays in golf. When you used to have a full, complete off-season, you don't really have that anymore in the world of golf. A couple of big announcements this week. Brooks Koepka was named the Player of the Year. Not that that was any big shocker whatsoever. Usually when you decide you're going to go out there and you are going to win both the Open Championship and then the PGA Championship, usually it works out pretty well for you that you're going to be in position to win Player of the Year. When you win two majors in a year, really difficult for you not to win Player of the Year, and that's exactly what Brooks Koepka did. And if you really look at Brooks Koepka, he's now won three of the last six majors because he, of course, won the PGA. He won the Open Championship, and then we go back to a year ago. He also won the U.S. Open that year as well. So Brooks Koepka is somebody that has been red hot going back to last year, and really he was struggling at the beginning of the season due to an injury, not to his play, just the fact that he couldn't get on the golf course because he was dealing with a wrist injury that kept him out of the Masters. So it's amazing how quickly Brooks Koepka turned things around this year, where he's able to win back-to-back majors this year and really put himself in a position to win Player of the Year. The other candidate would have been Francisco Molinari, considering Francisco Molinari won a major this year, won a bunch of tournaments. And the other thing with Molinari is look at his performance in the Ryder Cup. He tied the record for the most points in the history of the Ryder Cup. Five total points, four, of course, in team play when he teamed up with Tommy Fleetwood. And then, of course, he also got that point when you look at the singles match that he had. So Francisco Molinari would have been the other candidate for Player of the Year, but Brooks Koepka certainly deserved the award. Different player won the Money Championship this year, was number one on the money list for the second straight year. We'll tell you who that is in just a little bit. And coming up next, Bill Harmon's going to join us. A lot of stuff to get into with Bill this morning. Who has a better future going forward, Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth? We'll see what Bill thinks about that. You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour right here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Brian Barrett.
All right, we're almost midway through October. The golf season, though, never stops, and Bill Harmon also never stops. Bill, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Brian. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing well, Bill. We're doing well. Hey, have you seen some of the scores at the CIMB Classic? 19-under, 19-under, 17. It's crazy. Yeah, Gary Woodland's at 19-under. Leishman's at 19-under. It's pretty crazy, huh?
Unbelievable, the scores. I think the second round there was a 61 and a 62, and seems like everybody's shooting 4, 5, 6-under every round. So, yeah, incredibly low scores.
Yeah, you're right. Woodland shot a 61 yesterday, or on Friday, excuse me. Yeah, yesterday. And Mark Leishman shot a 62 in his second round. So, yeah, unbelievable. The news this week, Bill, you predicted it last week, as did Charlie. Not really a big surprise that Brooks Koepka was named Player of the Year after winning the U.S. Open and after winning the Open Championship as well. Not much of a surprise, but what a year for Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, when you think that he had a hand injury that kept him out almost a third of the year, he didn't even play in the Masters. And I talked to my nephew, Claude Harmon III, who's his coach, and he told me at one time they thought that the injury could have been career-ending injury. So for him to come back from that and to win the two majors in that short period of time, it still intrigues me that he's won four tour events and three of them have been majors. I think that is such a highly unusual statistic to have only one other one tour event and had three majors. So he's obviously a prime time player.
Yeah, that really is unbelievable when you think about it, Bill. Three of his four wins are majors, and that's interesting that you say that, what your nephew Claude Harmon told you about Brooks Koepka, that hand injury, because remember, of course, he missed the Masters, but I didn't realize it was that severe. I knew it was some sort of hand injury, but man, this almost cost him his career, and then you see him go out and win back-to-back majors this year. What do you think it is about Brooks Koepka? I don't know if it's in terms of the mental aspect of his game. We know how long he is off the tee, but what do you think makes him better, say, in bigger tournaments like majors, because of course he won one in 2017 as well, than in a regular tournament?
Well, I think I remember when he first came back over here after playing well in Europe, and he started on the Challenge Tour over there, and he won a bunch of tournaments. And it was one of the fall series events, I think it was up in San Jose, and he was leading after three rounds. And I talked to my nephew, and he said, this guy's not afraid of anything. Now, he didn't end up playing well on Sunday, but that always resonated with me when I see him in the hunt, because he does seem to play in a manner where he's trying to win, not trying not to lose. So it seems like when the heat is on, he hits longer, straighter drives. I remember when he won the Open at Shinnecock, you know, he got it up and down every time he had to. Every time he needed to make a putt, he made it. But the 16th hole was a par 5, and it was back into the wind, and the pin was all the way in the back. And every person that they showed hitting their third shot that last round came up between 15 and 30 feet short on this pitch shot, because if you went long, you were dead. And I think at the time he had a one-shot lead, and he hit the most beautiful wedge shot in there about a foot. And so even when the heat was on and even when he had the lead, he went ahead and took an aggressive shot. And I think he's just one of those players, Brian, that when he has a chance to win, he doesn't want to depend on someone else not doing it. I think that he figures, well, the ball is in my court, I'm going to take the last shot. And if I do what I'm supposed to do, they can't catch me. So very athletic guy, as we know, looking at him. But it's usually what's inside a player, really, that dictates how much they win, in my opinion.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And, too, we think about it. I remember when Tommy Fleetwood put up that 62 to get into the clubhouse and put some pressure on Brooks Koepka, and he comes up to the 17th and just absolutely nails his tee shot this year. And the other thing, Bill, we kind of alluded to this when it happened, when he won his second major of the season and his third major overall. Do you think now, because we had Tiger Woods back in the day, Rory McIlroy, and Charlie always brings this up, that he beefed up and whatnot, but do you think now maybe we'll see more players like Brooks Koepka and like Dustin Johnson, who are bigger players, bigger, stronger players, because of the success of Brooks Koepka? Because really, outside of Tiger, we haven't seen guys like with that terms of athleticism, in terms of the muscle, the strength. Do you think we'll see more guys like Brooks down the road?
Yeah, I think when you go to a tour event now, Brian, almost all of them are super fit. They might not be as fit as Brooks is.
Right.
You know, Brooks appears to be more of a lifter. But you see almost every one of them is extremely fit. You know, some of them are leaner than Brooks, and that might be their body type, et cetera. But they, nowadays, you know, years ago, well before your time, you know, old-time players used to say, one of these days a real athlete's going to come along and you know, drive the ball 5 miles and be able to chip and putt and all this stuff. And that Tiger Woods came along, and then he inspired other players, and now all the college systems and everybody has a trainer and they work out, and that's part of their practice. And so we have a whole generation now of young players that are incredibly fit, hit the ball a mile, have great technique. And so the only thing to me that really is going to separate them is their mindset. And, you know, Brooks's mindset, I believe, is to win when he has an opportunity to win. And he's obviously performed so beautifully on three big stages. So it'll be interesting to see his progress.
Yeah, and Bill, clearly he deserved to win the award, but if there was somebody else that had an argument for it, it would have been Francesco Molinari with the year that Molinari had. Molinari was unbelievable, and we look at the Ryder Cup. I mean, you knew it was happening at the time, but you forget when you look back that he was 5-0. He won all four of his team events with Tommy Fleetwood, and then he goes out there on Sunday, and he wins again. Tremendous season for him. He wins his first major, and in his mid-30s, which you don't see as much in golf. I mean, you can see it, but it's amazing to see a guy like Molinari having the best year of his career at this advanced age. His putting was unbelievable in the Ryder Cup. And now we find out, Bill, this week, that actually Molinari was playing with a little bit of a back issue. Now, he's okay. It's not anything that's going to hurt him long-term or anything along those lines. But still, when you think back to his Ryder Cup performance, it makes it even more impressive that this guy's playing through a back injury, and he played five times.
Yeah, I think the golf fan doesn't realize the emotional stress of playing every match in the Ryder Cup. Statistically speaking, players that play all five matches, generally speaking, do play poorly on Sunday. I think the stats are decidedly against someone playing all five matches relative to their singles performance. But the 36 holes, two straight days under intense pressure, he and Fleetwood were playing big-time players on the biggest stage, really, and the toll that takes on players emotionally. Now, the Ryder Cup has a way of keeping you jacked up if you're playing good. You know, if one of those matches he and Fleetwood went out and they were a little bit flat, they might have got it handed to them. But they never really got behind anybody, it just didn't look like to me. So incredible performance, and as you expressed, he's a middle-aged guy, let's say. They're all long hitters nowadays, but he's not crazy long. And he's so precise. He has almost a hypnotic rhythm about his swing. He's kind of the modern-day player in a sense, even though he's in his 30s. He's got all kinds of coaches, putting coaches, swing coaches, mental coaches and everything. And so he's got the whole package going. And when you watch him under the gun, he doesn't blink. His face doesn't change expressions. He looks relaxed. He doesn't look like a nervous Nelly. So I think he's a great story, Brian. I think and he handles himself so beautifully. He's quite a gentleman, it seems like. So I think really one of the really great stories of 2018 was Molinari. And we tend to forget that he did play that last round at Carnoustie with a guy named Tiger Woods and stared him down. So really, really good stuff. And I guess it goes to show you can always improve if you want to. And he seems to have improved every facet of his game.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because he was kind of the forgotten man going into Sunday, and he's the one that comes out the winner. And both of his wins on the PGA Tour come this year at the Quicken Loans National, where he's 21-under, and then, of course, as you mentioned, at Carnoustie. I wonder this too, Bill, and as you mentioned, middle-aged guy, 35 years old. You think going back to last year where at the PGA Championship he finished tied for second, I wonder how long it took him to believe that he could actually win a major. When you, last year, so in 2017, he's a 34-year-old, he hadn't really been close to winning a major. Before that, tied for 19th once at the Masters, tied for 23rd once at the U.S. Open in 2014. But last year, at the end of the season, that PGA Championship where he finishes second, I'm wondering if, from the mental standpoint of the game, if that's something that could have catapulted him forward into this year, knowing, oh, I actually can win at the highest levels, because before this year, we hadn't really seen him do it.
I think there's players tend to blossom at different times in their career. I'm always a little bit leery of players that blossom too early. You know, right now, you know, I'm a huge Jordan Spieth supporter, but, you know, he was so good there at a young age that we tend to put more pressure on him. You know, he's in the top 10 in the world, and we're wondering what's wrong with him. And so a lot of times players come out, they don't have all the fanfare and maybe the amateur record, and I'm sure Francisco Nerden played in college in America. And it takes them just more time to believe in themselves. And I think you're right. You know, you go and you finish second in a major, and when it's all over, you probably will look back over the course of those 4 days and see where you could have won if you'd have cleaned up a couple things. So, you know, success breeds success. It's hard to be successful when you're missing every cut, you know, and you get beat down emotionally. So he seems to have just gradually built himself up. Now I think it'll be very interesting to see how he performs next year, because the spotlight's going to be on him a little bit, and he's played his whole career under the radar, so to say.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, a lot more coming up this morning, Bill. Justin Thomas won his second straight money title, first guy to do that since Tiger Woods. We'll get into that. Plus, who has the biggest upside? Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, or Jason Day? You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour right here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Brian Barrett.
All right, well, no Charlie today. Bill, apparently I've been told that Charlie today is praying that his Houston Astros can put up a fight against the 108-win Boston Red Sox. I guess that's what Charlie's doing today.
I think that is probably what he's doing. I'm mourning the loss of my L.A. Dodgers
last night
to the Brewers. But that should be a heck of a series. There's something about Houston. I don't know. I know that you're probably a Red Sox fan. But if I was a Red Sox fan, I'd be pretty worried about those Astros. There's just something about them. They seem to have a formula for winning these big games. So it looks like their pitching might be better than the Sox, but like you said, Boston won 108 games. It's kind of hard to deny that. That's 8 or 9 months of playing pretty good, so that should be a great series. And the Brewers are on a roll. They've won 12 straight games, so not a huge upset that they beat L.A. yesterday.
Yeah, tough to see another tough outing for Kershaw. And then, yeah, I am scared of the Astros as a Red Sox fan. That is a juggernaut. I think they're going to try to become the first team to win back-to-back World Series since the Yankees, and certainly they have the team to do so. But getting back to the golf, Bill, Justin Thomas, for the second straight year, he's top player on the money list, back-to-back years, first guy to do it. I went back through all the lists here. It appears he's the first guy to win the money list in back-to-back years since Tiger Woods did it. You know, I get Brooks Koepka won the Player of the Year, and that has the prestigious value of it. But if it was me, I'd probably rather be Justin Thomas today.
Well, I think that, you know, as you alluded to, Tiger's the only one that's really done it in kind of modern-day golf to win it two straight years. And I think Brooks is winning the two majors, and then, you know, we had the big Ryder Cup. And then they announced the Player of the Year. It kind of diminished what Justin Thomas did this year. And so, you know, everybody seems to get a little bit more publicity than he does, whether it's Dustin Johnson or his great buddy Jordan Spieth, and now Brooks Koepka, who doesn't really get that much notoriety for what he's done. But Justin Thomas, you know, winning two straight money titles, there's a lot of good players. I don't think Mickelson ever won one. You know, if you want to go back to a lot of great players that have never won a money title, and this young man has won two in a row, boy, that's a heck of a feat. And he plays to win, too, though. I think he's one of those guys that he's really got a lot of fire in his belly. I've often wondered what it did for his career watching his great friend Jordan Spieth come out so hot, and he kind of became the forgotten one. I think it's an incredible feat at his age to have won two straight money titles.
Well, and think about this too, Bill. So we were just talking about Brooks Koepka, four career wins. You look at Justin Thomas, he has 9 wins already. You look at the resume, Haskins Award in 2012, FedEx Cup champ in 2017, As we mentioned, PGA Tour leading money winner, 17 and 18. PGA Player of the Year in 2017. PGA Tour Player of the Year in 2017. And not to mention, of course, he won the major at the PGA Championship in 2017. And he was by far the best player at the Ryder Cup for the U.S. So, I mean, that resume that he's piled up really in a two-year window, I get that he's been on tour for more than 2 years, but really that two-year window, that's a pretty incredible resume.
Well, I think I told, I might have said this on the show, but when he was a rookie, he was in the last group with Bill Haas at the, I call it the Bob Hope Classic, I don't know what it was called then. And Bill ended up winning, but it was Justin's really first foray into having a chance to win the tournament. And afterwards, a reporter asked him, he said, what'd you learn being in the last group? And, you know, I expected him to say something kind of benign. He said, well, I learned if you're tied for the lead with three holes to play, don't play him in one over par. And what I got out of that was he was upset for losing the tournament. And even though he was a young player and he was a rookie, he knew that that was an opportunity to win. And for some reason, when he said that, and I read it actually, I thought to myself, boy, here's a young kid that came out and finished in second. At that moment, you know, shortly after the tournament, he was upset. And if you watch him play, he plays with a lot of fire. He's not a metronome out there, you know. He just shows his emotions. He shows his displeasure. And I tend to like players with fire. My dad told me years ago he never met a good player that didn't have a temper. And that it's okay to get upset. It's just a matter of what you do with that temper. Some people use a temper to belittle themselves and get worse, and others use it to fire themselves up. And he seems to be the latter to me. He's fired up when he plays.
Yeah, Bill, I think that's part of his appeal too, right? Because as great as Brooks Koepka has played and as great as Dustin Johnson has been, they're kind of boring in terms of their personality on the course. They're very laid back, and that actually works to Brooks Koepka's favor. I mean, we've seen him perform well at majors, and maybe that's part of it because he's a flatliner. But, yeah, that's what makes Justin Thomas, to me, really appealing, is he's all over the place. He's got a ton of energy, and we saw that come out in the Ryder Cup. Now, you put out an interesting question here, Bill. When we look at Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth and Jason Day, who is the guy with the best upside of that group going forward to you?
Well, I think we just talked about him, you know, because DJ and Jason Day are, you know, considerably older now than Justin Thomas. Jordan Spieth has just hit a little bump in the road. I'm not all that concerned about him. My only concern about him is he's such a high-energy guy, and he seems to get so upset and put so much into every shot. I just hope that his emotions don't get the best of him. You know, Koepka is interesting, but, you know, he's won five less times than Justin, but he's won two more majors than Justin. DJ is also interesting for being a great player. I don't think by nature he's a great putter, but he's got great nerves, so when his stroke feels good, he'll make them. But I'd have to go with Justin Thomas. I think he's younger. He wins a lot. Two straight money titles. But it wouldn't surprise me if any of those five players. I don't know if Jason Day is still in that group, to be honest with you. Though he had a great start to the season last year. But he seems to have cooled off a little bit. Always just talking about back injuries and vertigo and stuff like that. So I look at Justin Thomas to be the one to continue on, let's say, for the next 5 to 10 years. You know, and it's funny how we don't even really have Rory in there anymore. He's just kind of fallen off. It's an interesting thing to observe because he's so gifted and so talented. But he seems a little bit lost or lacking in direction or something. I don't know what it is. I don't believe that he's gotten fat and he's made all this money. I don't buy that. I just think that sometimes, Brian, these young players, they're so good, and your natural instinct is to try to get better. And if you're not careful, you're going to ruin the very swing or the very technique that allowed you to be a great player. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, this thing of always trying to get better, because changing your swing isn't always the reason that you do get better. So it'll be very. I'm still very interested to see how Rory plays the next couple of years.
Yeah, I am too. For a player that is as talented as Rory, it was a rough season. Okay, if it was anybody else not in the top 10 in the world, it wouldn't have been considered a rough season. But what happened to him at the Masters with Patrick Reed, that was terrible. What happened to him at the Tour Championship with Tiger, where he just fell apart on Sunday. And then we look at what happened to him at the Ryder Cup. He was really the one European player that didn't play well, and he went up against Justin Thomas on Sunday, and Thomas beat him. So I thought that was a tough, tough year for Rory. Bill, we'll continue to talk about Rory in a second, kind of compare him to Jordan Spieth. Who do you feel better about going forward between those two players? A lot more to get into. You're, of course, listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. It's here nationally on SB Nation Radio. And if you're in Houston, make sure you can always listen to us locally on the all-new SportsMap 94.1. We'll be right back, right here, on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Brian Barrett.
Hey, Bill, just as we were up against it there, I was thinking about it when I was saying that at the end of the segment there with Rory McIlroy, and just to some of the weird endings he had this year. When he goes up against Tiger at Atlanta, he doesn't play well. I mentioned what happened at the Ryder Cup, loses to Justin Thomas, and really did not play well in the Ryder Cup period. And then we go back to the Masters at the beginning of the year, and you pointed it out after it happened, where Rory McIlroy on that Saturday night had said all the pressure's on Patrick Reed, and Patrick Reed comes out, he plays well, and then Rory does not play well on Sunday at the Masters. So it seems like the opportunities that Rory had this year, I don't know what it is, if it's a mental thing, because I remember when Rory burst onto the scene, when he won those back-to-back majors, he was blowing out the field. So I don't know if it's something, a mental block with Rory McIlroy, but I thought those three things this year were really weird for a player of Rory's caliber.
Well, you know, I said it that at the Masters, I was absolutely shocked at his press conference on Saturday, where he deflected all the pressure and, you know, basically tried to put it on Patrick Reed and kind of went with this thing, which I hate in sports, the thing I've got, when they say I've got nothing to lose, you know, I don't understand that. I got nothing to lose. What are you playing for, you know? But here was a guy who had an opportunity to win the Grand Slam the next day, and it seemed to me that he was trying to deflect the pressure, and it just didn't seem like Rory. It seems to me the great players want everything to be up to them and how they play and how they perform, and it seemed to me that he was kind of passing the buck a little bit there, and to me it was a little look into his psyche that perhaps he doesn't have the confidence that he once had. Now, this isn't a criticism of him. I mean, at the end of the day, Brian, we're all human beings, you know, and
right.
We tend to anoint these young players after a hot streak as being the next it. And, you know, the really, really great players have continued brilliance. And in our sport, golf, that lasts for decades. And so he had an incredible 4 or 5 year stretch. And right now, he's not quite the player that he was. He still has the ability. But I think once a player loses his what I call nerve, he can become ordinary. And he just does not seem to be the confident, freewheeling player that he once was, in my opinion. But when you have that ability, you certainly can always get it back. But confidence is a pretty fleeting thing in golf and in sports and life. And sometimes when the confidence erodes, it doesn't come back automatically like a lot of people think it may.
Yeah, and Bill, you've mentioned his putting woes over the past year or so, and maybe that's what leads to him losing some of his confidence, is the fact that he's not putting really well. So with that being said, who's more likely to bounce back in 2019? Now, this is all relative, because Rory and Jordan Spieth, most players on the tour would take the seasons they had, but who's more likely to bounce back in 19, Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy?
I'm going to go Jordan Spieth. although Rory seems to have a bigger upside, I think Rory has a little bit longer now of a couple of years of indifferent play. And so I think his hole is just slightly deeper to pull himself out of than Jordan. So it wouldn't surprise me, obviously, if either one had great years. But I'm going to pick Jordan for this. There's something about Rory just seems very perplexed out on the course to me.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, Jordan Spieth, too. I mean, we can go back, and he had a couple of decent performances in majors this year. And I wonder, too, Bill, somebody of Jordan's stature, the fact that he could have been fined by the PGA, obviously he wasn't, and it made sense. He's going to play in more tournaments this year because he didn't play in the 25 that were required. I think that could actually help Jordan, motivate Jordan, the fact that he had to go through that process where he now has to play in extra tournaments next year after not qualifying for the Tour Championship. There's something about not just golfers, but really athletes in general. When something like that happens to them, when they suffer a bad loss, I remember when the Spurs years ago lost to the Miami Heat in an awful series where Ray Allen hit the crazy shot at the end of the game, and the next year the Spurs come back and they win the championship. Spieth, it kind of feels like this, missing the Tour Championship, for somebody of his talent, it seems like that's something that could actually motivate Jordan going forward.
Oh, I would think so. I think in our wildest dreams, we never thought he'd be in the top 30 on the money list to get into that season-ending event. It's just something that we just didn't consider, really. You know, I think I've said on this show that I made a bet years ago with people that right after Jordan's great year in the majors, that he would never have a year in his life where he finished in the top 10 in every major, more or less top two or three.
Yeah.
And everybody jumped all over that. Now, we have years for me to lose that bet. but it's not automatic that these guys play good all the time. And that is a great thing about our sport, is you've got to prove yourself every swing. Forget every tournament, every day. Every time it's your turn to play, nothing is automatic in golf, and you still have to perform and you still have to play. And there's so many good players. I remember a tour player named Jim Colbert said one time that if there's 150 players, 50 of them are playing really good, and the other 50 are right on the edge, and then there's 50 not playing good. So you're basically got 100 of the best players in the world that are playing pretty good. And so it doesn't take much to go wrong for you to fall into, let's say, 50th place. And so a lot of times we look at the performance of a guy and he finishes 10th in a major, let's say, someone like Jordan Spieth, and we think he had a bad tournament. It's not a bad tournament. It's a good tournament. But he's created this monster of that super-duper year that he had, you know. And so anytime, to be honest with you, unless you're one of the super-duper stars, if you finish in the top 20 in a tour event, you've actually played some excellent golf, and you're probably a putt here and up and in there from contending and winning. But some of these young players who come out and set the world on fire, they create a monster for themselves, and it's a hard thing to live up to when you're a young person like that, and you've got all the money in the world, and everything is going your way. So it's always interesting to see how they respond when things aren't going their way.
Yeah, certainly true, and we'll see. Jordan and Rory, we'll see if they both bounce back. That'd be interesting for the tour. All right, so somebody, this is one of the weird seasons we've seen in recent history. So Patrick Reed, we knew he was a villain, and then he wins the Masters, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, what a season it's going to be for Patrick Reed. And I don't know if anybody could have finished the season on more of a low point than Patrick Reed, because now he's added to the reputation of being a villain by criticizing Jim Furyk. Remember what he said? He was blindsided that he wasn't paired up with Jordan Spieth. And then we had an anonymous teammate, and maybe not a player, but somebody within the American team that said that's not true. He wanted to play with Tiger Woods. He wasn't blindsided whatsoever by the decision. So you're trying to think, who do we really believe here? But now if you look at Reed going forward, is it good, Bill, for the sport that you have somebody like Patrick Reed that it seems like at least the large majority of fans dislike and will be cheering against?
Well, I think that all sports, I kind of look at the LPGA Tour, the lack of interest the quality of the golf is incredible.
Right.
But they're all dial tones. You know, there are no personalities really on the golf course. And so sports needs personalities for shows like ours. And Patrick Reed is a perfect for, you know, a talk show like us. But in his case, it sounds like he's lost some credibility with this situation in the sense that perhaps what he said was simply not true. You know, so he threw Jim Furyk, who's one of the most honorable, decent guys you'll ever meet, under the bus. And, you know, the players immediately came to Jim's defense. And in Jim's interview with Tim Rochefort on the Golf Channel, he said that he had texted back and forth with Patrick before the Ryder Cup about, you know, the possibility of playing with Tiger and this and that. So Jim probably had evidence on his phone that Patrick knew. But Jim being the gentleman that he is, he didn't present that evidence because it's probably not good for Jim either for this thing to have a shelf life. So the answer to your question is, yeah, it is probably more interesting. I think it'll be even more interesting. I don't know if Patrick was ever one of the more popular players in the locker room anyway, but it sounds like right now he is the least popular player, especially on the guys that played on that Ryder Cup team. And so I have enough people in the know, you know, to get some inside scoop on things. And my scouts tell me that the players are pretty disappointed in the way he handled everything. And plus, he played terrible, you know, in the matches with Tiger. He did win his singles match, but they said that he would have barely broken 85 in one of the matches with Tiger. So, you know, when you play poorly like that, and then you take a shot at a team that went 3-1, by the way. You know, your team went 0-2 with the greatest player that ever lived, and the other team went 3-1, and you're coming up with sour grapes. It's not a good look. It's not a good look, but, you know, that's his history. You know, he had troubles with Georgia, if any of it's valid, but I don't think people just make this stuff up. And Augusta State, story was that he was voted off the team, you know, on many occasions. And he's never really addressed it. You know, he's never really said, he could easily say, looking back on it, I was young and I made some stupid decisions. But he never has. He's kind of used this almost like a Vijay Singh, you know, to lash out at the people that are pointing fingers at him. So he's an interesting case, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes moving forwards amongst his peers. But he, you know, the week that I spent at the President's Cup in South Korea, I didn't have any interactions with him, and nor did he do anything wrong at all over there from what I could see. But he definitely kind of had an air about him that he doesn't really care if you like him, and he doesn't care if he's sitting at a table by himself. And that seems to be his MO. You know, I don't think he's somebody that really cares what people think about him, at least on the surface. That's what it looks like. But it'd be interesting to see if he does get kind of zeroed out by everybody, to see how he responds.
Yeah, Bill, and it's an interesting point, too, that you make about his Ryder Cup performance, how poorly he performed. And then one of the things he was saying to the New York Post, whoever got the original quote from Patrick Reed, is that he was shocked that he wasn't playing in all four matches because of his success in the past. It's like, well, that week you were playing awful. Why would Jim Furyk put you out for all four matches? It wouldn't make sense. And towards the end of the season, Bill, I mean, he was awful off the tee, just horrible.
Well, you know, he didn't play well in South Korea. One of my jobs there, jobs or responsibilities, I was driving Freddie Couples around. And in the practice rounds, each vice captain would follow a group, you know, and watch him play, and they'd report back to Captain Haas. And Patrick Reed was playing very poorly. And I know that he and Jordan won a match, but I think Jordan was 9 or 10 under after 14 holes. And but he wasn't playing well over there. And I don't think he set the world on fire in that particular President's Cup. But I think he's a soloist. I think he doesn't really mesh with people real well. I think for whatever reasons, he's got his own chip on his shoulder. And that's probably why he's good when he gets in the hunt. Because when he does get in the hunt, he plays pretty darn good. He's one of those guys, when he gets a sniff of the victory, he seems to really lock in and play. So, you know, if he doesn't care what people think about him and he doesn't care what his peers think about him, he seems to have a nice recipe to stir the pot properly.
No doubt about that. All right, Bill, when we come back, what does 2019 hold for Phil Mickelson? You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on SportsMap 94.1 in Houston and on SB Nation Radio nationally.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, powered by Insperity on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. With Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps, here's Brian Barrett.
All right, Bill, before we go today, Phil Mickelson, tough year for him. Now, he did win in Mexico, but after that kind of fell apart, finished dead last at the Tour Championship, and then at the Ryder Cup, him and Bryson DeChambeau together, that was one of the worst pairings I've ever watched when I've been watching the Ryder Cup. Obviously, you've watched it a lot longer than I have, but man, that was ugly. So what do you think of Phil heading into 2019? Is he going to be competitive, or are we starting to see Phil really fall off here?
Well, he's definitely the most resilient player of this generation. And so every time we write him off, you know, he seems to come back. But he is getting up in age. Still is just a god-awful driver of the golf ball. His talent level is much deeper than it's ever been. I think we'll see some flashes in the pan because it's too good. But I suspect we'll see a little bit more of what we've seen. But if he can learn to drive the ball pretty good, then he could play at a level very close to his good years. And I'm of the opinion that it's just a mystery to me how the greatest players in the world can't come up with a swing to drive the ball pretty good. It should be the easiest club in the bag. Get to tee the ball up, put it where you want. So if he can figure out a way to drive it good, then I think he'll be all right.
All right, Bill. Well, we made it without Charlie. Have yourself a great weekend, all right?
Thank you.
All right, the great Bill Harmon. Charlie Epps will be back with us next week. I'm sure we'll get a documented, detailed report from his golf weekend this weekend. I know Charlie built busy playing some golf with family. Thanks to Jose for producing. We'll talk to you guys next week, same time, right here on SB Nation Radio.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.